I'm Isander.
And I'm Coda.
And today we're going to be talking about the Space Wolves.
The Space Wolves.
One of them in specific. Because, and this is one of the episodes where there were different variations of it originally. Because originally, I wanted to do a guy named Logan, who's really cool. Literally rides a sleigh into battle, driven by wolves. So cool.
Oh, I was going to ask if this was like a Wolverine reference.
No, but his last name's like Grimnar. He's really cool.
Obscenely, like, superhero edgy.
Oh, you don't even know the half of it.
Like, that's mid-90s, Silver Age. That's not the Silver Age.
No, it's not.
That's not the Silver Age of comics. Because that's like, the Silver Age is like 60s after they had the weird, like, censorship laws resurgence, right?
No, I'd say it's like 90s. 90s was Edge.
No, I thought the Silver Age was like...
No, that's not the Silver Age. I'm talking about when that name would have worked.
Have
been in the Edge, like the Blade. No, the
90s is the Edge. Yeah. I'm in agreement. But like, I mistitled it the Silver Age. The Silver Age came a while before that. Yeah.
Originally, he was going to be the topic of this episode, and he's great. And he will be his own topic someday. The problem is, he is very relevant, very active, and there are other things the wolves get up to that I think he would be paired better with. So he's getting shelved, kind of. He also has a great model, too. Oh, God, it's fantastic. I'm not joking. Slay, driven by direwolves. It's very cool. Most murderous variant of Santa you have ever seen.
So cool. You could say he's slaying.
Yeah, sure, that. today we'll be talking instead about Bjorn.
Bjorn.
The man out of time. He's another... They have quite a few named characters. It's not ultramarine levels of named characters where there's just so many of them. But the wolves are not lacking, let's say. They have quite a few. But I feel like Bjorn complements them better because he was there in the beginning.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, he's...
Like,
he's...
how far beginning? Like, the beginning of the Space Wolves or the beginning of the Space
Marines? Great Crusade.
Fought next to Russ.
He's been around. So I feel like that is the best way to talk about it is because he was there. He's this historic figure that fought side by side with Lehman Russ. A huge deal for anyone. But before we get into him, remember, you have a few options. It's Abaddon, it's the Gene Stealers, and it's the Eldar Aspect Warriors. Two of them are going to get made. One is going to disappear. I have my biases. I think I know how this one's going to shake out, but I've been surprised before.
One of them's going to disappear until his great return for the 13th
right?
Great Poll.
And so you know exactly what to do. Bjorn is one of the strongest contenders for one of the oldest things that's in the Imperium. Like I said, he's a veteran of the Great Crusade, which is... Like, if you had a modern guy serving in Desert Storm who remembers the Punic Wars.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say the Civil War, but no, that puts it even a greater scale.
And even the Punic Wars are no, because it's 10,000 years.
Yeah.
He is a relic walking around, currently interred in a dreadnought. Which at that age, like, come on.
It makes sense.
At some point, Grandpa's going to need a walker, and he has his walker.
If your walker has a couple dozen Sidewinder missiles attached to it, and a 10mm minigun.
And massive lightning claws. Oh my god, it's so cool. It's so cool. Sidebar, you'll see this in the main episode. I feel like the Space Wolves have the best dreadnoughts. Or they're at least up there. They do a lot with them.
You say lightning claws, and I'm just imagining this dreadnought just full emperor at something.
No, it's more like claws wreathed in lightning. Like, and the thing about it is these are dreadnought-sized claws, so it's like a plane wing cutting through you. Not that egregious, but, you know, it's less of a sword and more the blunt force behind it. It just so happens to be sharp.
Yeah.
You know? Like, okay, cool. That's a 30-foot-long baseball bat. At that point, yeah, you know, it's a blade.
It's gonna hit you.
It's going clean through me.
They went to the guts school of making a sword where it's such, you know, it doesn't need to be razor sharp. It just needs to have...
It is still razor sharp.
A sharp enough edge and have enough weight behind it that it works.
It is still razor sharp. You will see in a lot of his art, there's a lot of stuff getting blended in those. It's a whole thing for
him. Are we talking about guts or Bjorn?
Bjorn.
Okay.
Bjorn. Well, I
need to read Berserk. I really need to read Berserk.
It's good. There's quite a few references in Elden Ring and Dark Souls. Regardless, he was not always in the Dreadnought. He was a regular Space Marine for the beginnings of his life until he bumped into a hell of a demon. one of Korn's generals, and...
Oh, so this is one hell of a demon.
Oh, it ripped his friends apart. All of them. Yeah. Every single person in his company gone. It's Kornate demon. The only reason he survived, other than his own skill, is being bailed out by Lehman. Lehman had to get involved with that, which is a good thing, because, hey, whoa, I was saved by Dad. That's a whole thing. It's really cool. Downside is these are the Space Wolves. They are very Viking. They're very die honorably in combat, and he did not get to do that.
He got saved, and I assume that would be a little bit of a point of shame for him.
Survivor's guilt is bad enough. It's doubled for these guys, and it's tripled when you consider that a funeral for a Space Wolf is basically it's a celebration of life where you gather and you tell the stories of this person. A big thing for them is having a saga writ about yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Bjorn is the only one who knew all of them.
So he had to deliver every single one of their sagas, didn't he?
He had to give like 20 eulogies. And these are long ones, too. You have to tell start to finish, birth to death.
Oh, it's a saga. That's what a saga is.
This is like a week endeavor for him. By the end of it, he is racked with guilt and sorrow and swears to get vengeance upon the demon once he gets out of this depressive state he's in. Takes him about 5 years to do that. A really long time, and they finally relocate the demon, and that's good news. Bad news is, Lehman Russ hears about it and goes, no, I will vanquish the demon. And this leads to this really fun interaction where Russ outright swears that I will vanquish that demon, and as he's rushing in, he finds Bjorn already there, holding his own against the demon.
Honestly, if I were Lehman, I'd be a little bit proud.
He stops everything and just kind of drinks it in.
Just like, oh my.
Look at him go.
He made it before me. Look at him go. And wow.
Like, and this isn't like Berserker Fury, like I'm just throwing myself into the meat. No, he's dodging, ducking, diving. He's genuinely beating the brakes off of this guy. I mean, it's a good showing for Bjorn. He even climbs the top of it and rips its throat out. Which apparently is a way you can banish a demon, fun fact. At least Bjorn did it. Yeah. Okay. That's where he earned the title, maybe, of the Fell-Handed. We'll get to why that's a maybe later. But for now, just put a pin in that. Just remember, maybe where he got his name.
Ripping out a demon's throat would make a strong case for the Fell-Hand.
Yeah, exactly. And he was immediately promoted by Lehman once he saw that.
Oh, absolutely.
Again, obvious reasons.
I would immediately... I'd promote him mid-fight. Yeah. Win or loss.
Win or loss. This promotion means he was now by Lehman's side for a lot of the Great Crusade into the Heresy. He was there. Ooh. We haven't covered this.
Is this a new thing?
I don't think we've covered Magnus's time playing Ace Attorney.
His what?
Magnus goes on trial.
Okay.
It's a whole I'll give the cliff notes just because I don't think we've covered this in any capacity ever.
Is this over the whole bursting the Golden Throne shield thing, or is this before that?
No, it comes before that actually.
Okay.
If there's this council that's convened effectively to decide what to do with Psykers, if they're even worth using, right? I'm really oversimplifying this. It's a whole thing. It is basically the very concept of using a certain type of weapon, that weapon being Psykers, is put on trial. It's kind of like how we have put on trial multiple times the very concept of using nuclear arms.
Yeah, it's right? Not too far a leap of logic there.
We've effectively done that. The UN has all met and gone, should we do this, guys? And the resounding answer has been...
Probably not.
Same thing happened in that council where everyone agreed... Probably not. Psykers are really dangerous. And to be fair, Psykers are really dangerous.
I mean, they have a direct line to hell in their skulls.
I give the Imperium a lot of crap for being very witch hunty, because they are. But you have to remember part of why they got there is because when things got really sideways, the worlds that were the most prejudiced against Psykers fared the best. Because there's no one whose head can explode and boop, there's a Kornate demon. You know, like it. Psykers have it rough, but that is something that can and does happen occasionally.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, if they're trained and taken in properly, that does not usually happen. But yeah, just burn them at the stake. You know. So this whole trial is there to.
You saying that makes me realize that Star Wars, the entire canon of Star Wars, could have gone a whole different direction
if they just started burning everyone who had the Force.
Yeah.
Yeah, could see it. I could see it. There's some things that are genuinely
Let's see sketchy. This. Let's see this fun Star Wars AU where instead of like Force users being like honored, they just become infinitely reviled and murdered at the stake.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, actually, technically, the Empire has that, but they still have.
Well, that's for Jedi specifically. Well, no, I think it's for. Yeah, no, you're right. No, it's for everyone.
They find Force sensitives as a kid and they go, couldn't we use you? If we can't, then just kill them.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So I guess we've kind of done that. A little bit.
Yeah.
Ish.
So the main problem with this trial and why it's Magnus who's getting to play Ace Attorney is because in our world, when we put nuclear arms on trial, we're just putting nuclear arms on trial. The concept, the very weapon. We do not have Mr. Nuclear Arm. That's who I am on a fundamental level. You cannot separate me from this.
Mr. Nuclear Arm.
And so it genuinely turns into the trial of... It's Magnus v. the Imperium. And it's really rough stuff for
That's
Magnus.
That's kind of
it
funny.
One of my favorite pieces of art of Magnus comes from the trial. It's a very specific piece where it's him on what looks to be a Senate floor. And he's trying to make an argument for something, but the way it's framed is it's everyone looming over him. And it's very clear he can't talk his way out of it.
Yeah.
I really love it. In my head, that's how that council always went. That's how it felt. It really conveys that emotion. I don't know if that's actually the image from that, but that's just how I've internalized it.
Magnus was going full, that spoilers for Oppenheimer, that scene from Oppenheimer when he's like giving the speech.
Spoilers for Oppenheimer, they made a bomb. Yeah, of course.
No, when he's giving, it's not what I was gonna say.
No, I'm so sorry. It's the concept of spoil. I'm so sorry.
Let it be known he wound himself up for this one.
No, it's a concept of spoilers for World War II to an audience mostly from the Western world. We know how this would play out, pretty much beat for beat.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about the story. I'm talking about the filming tactics that were used.
I'm crying. I'm so sorry. Go on.
The scene from the movie Oppenheimer, when he's delivering the speech after the first live test goes well, I guess you could call it, and everything goes silent, and he's got the room vibrating behind him. I'd imagine that was Magnus during the entire trial.
Oh, I fully get what you mean. The scene where Oppenheimer is on trial, and they show off how anxious he is by making the whole kind of room shake and judder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that.
That was probably Magnus that whole time.
Very cogent point. I'm sorry. It was just the sentence, spoilers for Oppenheimer. No, it's just, you said spoilers for Oppenheimer and immediately, you know, like in old movies where like a newspaper will spin up to the front. In my head, I just saw a newspaper spin up to the front. Japan surrenders! And it's like, yeah, we know that. we know exactly Jesus. How this movie ends. I'm so sorry. But yes, that is fairly accurate to how that trial goes. And Bjorn is there. We will cover the trial and what happens next.
You know,
I've
just been thinking, Bjorn, isn't like Bjorn one of the most common, like Norse. I'm just going to use that Nordic. Isn't that like one of the most common Nordic names?
Yes. They take very heavily from Nordic culture.
Be like having like, I don't know, Jeff the Destroyer.
Yeah.
For a Western audience.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, this is the culture they rip from. I'm not going to say rip from, because what a lot of Space Marine legions tend to do is it tends to be a certain era or a certain type of warrior at their maximum, effectively. Like, you look at the Khan and it's Mongols taken to their extreme. This is the literal best a Mongolian warrior could ever be. Right, you look at the Ultramarines, and to some extent they represent like what the Roman Legion would be like all the way today, you know. And so with the Space Wolves, their whole theory is, what if Vikings, to a loose extent, they don't fully rip Vikings, but what if Vikings were taken to their logical extreme, and or furries, one of the two.
You said that, and it gave me a wonderful idea.
Mm-hmm.
We don't draw from a lot of modern cultures for this. Let us take the weird gun nut from the middle of the Florida bayou named Billy Bob.
Take him to his logical extreme. Like,
take him to his logical extreme.
That would be pretty tight.
I would love to see a Florida man Space Marine Legion.
Oh, don't worry. It'll happen at some point. I'm sure they're redneck Marines.
They ride massive genetically modified gators into battle.
You're joking? But I would.
That would be sick.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. So this trial happens, and Bjorn is there. It's a huge deal. One of the most pivotal moments in the Imperium's history, because had that trial gone a different way, the legions would not have split as evenly as they did. It's one of those very, very, you can point to that moment and go, this is where things went wrong. There's a couple of those in the prelude to the heresy. This trial leads to Magnus's big mistake, which leads to his backyard being ransacked by the Space Wolves. Bjorn is there for all of that. He's there on the front lines as Magnus's backyard is burned all the way to a crisp. He's there with Lehman Rusk as he decides to go take a field trip into the warp, which is really cool, by the way. It's a whole thing. It's framed as Lehman.
A field trip into the warp?
We don't cover a lot of Lehman, is what I realized in writing these, because he was... Lehman Rusk is an important part of the heresy, but an isolated part of the heresy. A lot of the time we've been able to touch on the various Primarchs at different stages because they interacted with each other. For example, you know a lot about Kurz by proxy because you've seen him just wreak havoc on everything.
Because Kurz has appeared in every video, whether or not it's a video about Kurz.
He won't appear in any of the Space Wolves ones.
Except he just did.
Ugh. Well, there's a second one, so he may not then. Anyway, so a lot of the Primarchs were kind of in groups for a lot of the heresy, you know? Like, Gilliman and Sanguinius and the Lion were kind of in a vague boy band group going on there, you know? There were the Shattered Legions who were all caught on Istvan. That's a kind of its own thing going on. The Wolves were pretty isolated, honestly. I mean, they were doing a lot, but it was... isolated for a big chunk of it.
They had their big fight with the Thousand Sons, but then they're off doing their own thing after that, right?
No, they were doing a ton in the heresy.
Well, no, I don't mean their own thing as if they were doing nothing. I mean, they were like, we're operating solo.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, a lot of the time they were taking a different approach from everyone else, you know? And so Lehman did take a field trip into the warp. We'll cover it in his own episode. He saw like a weird version of himself. It's framed as him going into Norse hell. Really cool stuff. Really cool stuff.
He saw like an opposite day version of himself with a goatee.
Funnily enough, you're really close. I wanted to get into this in the Lehman episode, but he saw a version of himself raised on Earth. And so he doesn't have, like, the fangs that he has, and his hair isn't, like, the long flowing mane he has, but it's, like, a cropped buzz cut. His teeth are perfectly straight, and he's, like, this military rigid man.
So we really did just get evil Lehman Russ.
No, we didn't get evil. Funnily enough, okay. No, this... Fine. Okay.
I'm only calling him evil Lehman Russ because it's a funny Star Trek reference.
Yes. It's very interesting, and a lot of people see that as the proof where the Lion is a real monster, not Russ, because Russ really looks the part of a beast, and we will cover this in his own episode. You'll look at Russ, and yeah, he eats raw meat, obviously, yeah. Right? But, and you look at the Lion, and he looks like royalty. I mean, he looks, even now, with a receding hairline, he looks, you Photoshop in... the current best image we have of the Lion, which is the Lion in Arcs of Omen, where he's got this kind of regal visage wreathed in green, right? You could take that image and shop it right into a photo of the royal family.
And it would make sense.
He'd kind of fit in.
It'd kind of fit in.
But the Lion is consistently one of the most unnerving Primarchs to be around. It's described over and over again as being in a room with an actual lion, where this is a man, sure, but man, does he behave like a beast? This proves that point really well, because you see Russ taken outside of his bestial trappings, you know? He's not raised by wolves, and now we get to see what... Because he actually literally...
He was literally raised by wolves.
Right. And so we get to see what Russ is like in default. And default Russ kind of looks like Dorne.
Really?
Just a straight crew-cut military man. Would not be out of place in Ultramar.
Okay.
And so it lends a lot of credence to that little theory. It's hard to tell, at least until we get them both back and see how they've changed. Mm-hmm. But And also because we never got to see, I don't think we got to see the lion if he was taken out of Caliban, you know? Maybe the monster hunter would be something different. Maybe if the lion was raised with wolves, it would have been a much worse situation. Who knows? What matters is he is there guarding the door when Russ goes on this long journey. And critically, Bjorn is told by Russ, do not turn around no matter what you hear. That is hell itself behind you I'm walking into. So don't, no matter what. Which proves to be very handy is everyone around Bjorn dies, except for Bjorn, who can hear Russ behind him telling him, turn around, buddy. Come on. You know you want to. It's Dad. Come on, turn around.
Was this General Hell or was this Tzeentch specifically?
General Hell. It's very heavily framed through the lens at which it's perceived, which is this is happening on their homeworld, which is very Norse. So it's borderline a trip through Helheim. You know, because the warp is not stationary in nature. It does change.
It does change. It's de facto chaotic. Mm-hmm. It's chaos.
So, yeah, who'd say it wouldn't look like that in some cases? No. And Russ is, all the Primarchs are such weird and odd warp entities that maybe they would even shape how it's perceived around them. I mean, you look at the extreme, which is Magnus, and yeah, oh boy, he definitely can.
Well, I'd imagine, because this is how it comes up in a lot of other sci-fi universes, is when you have some weird fourth dimensional fuckery, it's the best word for it, happening, it kind of shapes itself to your head.
Your perception.
Exclusively because, like, it's going to be different for everybody. It is just kind of an ephemeral entity that is there. It is. And it's going to show itself to you in the way that makes the most sense to you.
Yes, it's kind of like that. So Bjorn doesn't turn around the whole time, which, good on him.
he doesn't die.
Russ does come back and kill whatever the hell that was whispering behind Bjorn. And he does make it out. However, this is kind of one of the last times they would fight together. There's a few more times. I'm gonna cliff note it because a lot of it is they're in battle together. They're kind of whooping together. You know? He drags Russ out of battle. He does drag a wounded Russ to safety. That's a huge deal.
That is a massive deal.
Something that could wound a Primarch. But the most important thing that happened is Russ kind of leaves.
Leaves.
Yeah, leaves. This time, really diving right for hell. I mean, going right to the Eye of Terror. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, again, we haven't touched on Russ because he's off doing his own thing a lot of the time. But yeah, he basically said, I'll be back when you guys need me. In the meantime, I'm going to go try and find milk. And then walked away with some of his best guards, including what should have been Bjorn, because he was high enough rank to qualify. But Bjorn was left behind and given Russ's spear and was told to take his place as the Jarl of them all.
Oh, like keep the shit together.
Yes. And that spear is a huge deal because I don't know if you remember it. That's the spear that matches Valdor's spear. Remember that one? For those of you should watch the Valdor episode. Really fun
stuff. Does it do the same thing as Valdor's spear?
Did we not cover it in that episode?
No, we did, but I can't remember exactly what it did. Okay. I know Valdor's does like the whole I steal your memories.
No, I stab you, I know your true nature, and it stuck with me forever.
Yeah.
Russ's operates by drawing it out. So, like, for example, he stabs Horus with it. Like I said, the wolves are off doing quite a bit. He does outright stab Horus with it, and it brings out Horus's true self. And, like, it separates him from the four gods currently fighting over the controller. And it's a really cool thing, where Horus comes back, and it's actually Horus. But then he agrees with all the logic thus far, and then goes back to chaos. He, like, comes out, he's like, eh, well...
Well,
I'm kind of cooking for this one. I'm really aggressively oversimplifying. Damn. Russ needs his own video. But yes, that spear brings out the truth in something. Whereas the other one tells it to Valdor and gives it to Valdor. This one just brings it out for all to see. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of the Emperor's weapons. A huge deal. And he is the guy who's wielding it and has used that at the tip of many, 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 many assaults.
I'd imagine it'd be a very useful tool, considering it's one of the Emperor's personal weapons.
It's a spear that can withstand the force of Bjorn. That's really kind of what it's used for in his hands. Like, sure, yippee, cool, I can bring out your truth. It doesn't matter if the spear goes through your chest cavity with enough force to punch a hole.
Your true self is dead now.
Doesn't matter. You're dead in every dimension. He's a very lead from the front kind of general, which is really cool. He's also the guy in charge of... Every legion had a rough go of the heresy. Very few got out as good as the Ultramarines did, I'll be honest. A lot of them had some serious numbers.
And that's mostly just because the Ultramarines were able to recover very quickly afterwards.
Yeah.
Or they had the infrastructure in place to, like, not take that tank that hit as hard as
anybody else. I will spoil a little something for you, and that is the fact that I love Ultramarines. I do. I cannot deny that an Ultramarine factory does exist somewhere that just stamps them out at a controlled rate. That's a known factor. The Space Wolves have such a grueling training procedure that the floor to be a Space Wolf is sometimes as high as what being an honored champion in other chapters is. It's really rough.
This is like...
So there are not many of them to begin with. The Heresy thinned those numbers a bit, and it takes them a while to recover because of how brutal they are to each other.
I mean, I'd imagine if every U.S. Navy SEAL just spontaneously died of a heart attack at once, we would not have a fun time for a little bit after that.
Yes. So he oversees rebuilding the Legion and being in the front lines until his body cannot take it anymore. War has a cost, and his body can't pay it anymore. But because he's Bjorn, he gets interred into a dreadnought and does not stop.
He keeps going.
He keeps going. And he is, because being in a dreadnought is a very taxing thing, so he does lay dormant until he's absolutely needed. And he was already pretty old before he was put into a dreadnought. So this is, we got to throw Grandpa in a lotion bath for a little bit, otherwise he's just going to wrinkle away, you know? He has to keep existing, but he cannot play table tennis with us every day. But he does, because of this kind of stasis man on ice situation he has going on, he gets some of the best entrances.
Does he?
Oh my god. He's a weapon to be released only when is needed the most. Of course he has some cool entrances.
I can see some drama happening here.
I will tell you about Magnus's fantastic entrances because he has a flair for the dramatic.
But of course he does. He's a wizard.
Oh god, yeah. Magnus has some fantastic entrances, but the Fell-Handed has some good ones too. One of my favorite is when Magnus is getting payback for ransacking his world by ransacking their world, and being attacked by Magnus blows really, really hard.
Yeah.
It sucks. I call him a geek. I call him, like, noodle-armed and weak. He's very much so not that. When he's assaulting their fortress, he's appearing on 10 floors at once and just killing people.
I mean, I would imagine playing as a Psyker in Darktide, you can just make things' heads explode. Now, multiply that by a couple factors.
Oh, you don't even know the ceiling of Magnus.
A couple factors of 10.
Oh, I can't wait till we get to him. But yes, Magnus is wreaking havoc, and they thaw out Bjorn, who just takes a look at the battlefield, goes, oh, I fought these losers before. Do this, 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 and this. All right, cool. Now that you've done that, excuse me. And then he runs away full tilt, shouting Magnus's name before meeting him in combat and proceeding to wound him the worst Magnus has been wounded since he fought Leman Russ. Yeah.
Goddamn.
Bjorn is something else. And to be fair, he is holding a Primarch's weapon, so doy. Well, no, not at that point, but it's a whole
He's thing. Still a Space Marine and a Dreadnought.
Mm-hmm. Like, unfortunately, Magnus is super powerful, so he does kind of furrow his brow a bit, and both of Bjorn's arms shatter immediately. But that does not stop Bjorn, because... And
he hits him with a no arms, and his arms spontaneously combust.
Yeah. My favorite thing about that is Bjorn doesn't stop and instead starts headbutting him, trying to get him off the ledge they're fighting on.
He tries to ledge him.
Oh my god. Do you see why I love Bjorn? Dude, it is rough.
He reverts to fucking Destiny 1 Vault of Glass Aetheon tactics. Mm-hmm.
And it, again, you don't understand the scope of how badly wounded Magnus was when Leman Russ fought him. It is rough for Magnus. For this to get even close, it speaks volumes, especially since he recognizes Bjorn. Magnus is incredibly intelligent. He has a good memory, and he watched Prospero burn.
Does he go, uh-oh, or does he go, oh, I got this?
No, he goes, I know you. You were there that day. And so this is a bit of a grudge match for him. And he almost wins against Bjorn. I'll be dead honest. If Bjorn didn't get backup, he would be dead there. But backup does arrive. They banish Magnus. Whoop-de-doo. This will happen over and over again. So just be prepared for that. He is awoken again after the months of shame. We'll get to that later. And
the months of shame?
I think we briefly touched on this in the Grey Knights episode. It's a long story. And where the Space Wolves get most of their Mary Sue allegations. So that's its own thing. That's its own thing. But he's the guy who shows up and helps negotiate a peace. So he's not just a wartime general. He's pretty dang competent. And I love this because whenever he's... we've gotten the two sides of when he's awoken, which is the general rushing into battle to kill things. And then when Bjorn arrives, it's like the walking museum effectively arriving. Because a lot of... everyone recognizes it immediately, but nobody wants to believe it, if that makes sense. Because they see the dreadnought, and they see all the decorations on it, and they see the scarring and the age of it, and the markings from the battles he's won. And it shouldn't make sense.
It's like, why are you here?
There are banners from wars fought with the Emperor.
Whoa.
Like helmets and armor from people who don't exist anymore. They're hardly known.
That would literally be if you were just on the front lines in 2024 fighting some war, and then somebody from the Punic Wars comes out.
Mm-hmm. Anyone who recognizes it, has any form of historical knowledge, immediately bows and goes, I am a loyal servant of the Emperor of Mankind. I am not worthy.
I'm not worthy.
And then,
we're not worthy.
Yes. And for those of them who don't, they simply just refuse to believe it. My favorite is the quote where there's this Inquisitor who's looking at it and looking at him and looking at it and looking at him and going, did you walk in the age of the Emperor? And Bjorn simply laughs and says, walked, ran, pissed, and killed. I did it all. I met the Allfather, and I fought by his side more than once. I do think he liked me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Bjorn's freaking great, right?
That's awesome.
And my favorite thing is after he says that, the Inquisitor starts slowly going to his knees, realizing what it is he's standing in front of, and Bjorn's response is, oh, for God, not you again. Like, not this is... If you can't tell, I quite love the situation that custodies and a lot of older space marines find themselves in, where they know exactly what happened, but nobody else does. And so they're treated and venerated as these god warriors.
You are the people that I heard about in the legends.
Yes, and all of them hate it so much. It's like,
no, I'm just a guy. Yes, please stop.
I love it because it shows the vast differences between modern Imperium and vintage Imperium, let's call it. Because I'll be dead honest, if the modern Imperium coexisted with the old Imperium, it would be on its hit list. I do think they would truly be at war. And you look at the way these figures are treated, and yeah, pretty much. Even Bjorn acknowledges this when people call him the God Emperor, and he goes, that's what started all of this. And everyone goes, what do you mean? Nothing.
Nothing.
Don't worry about
it. I'll have an Inquisitor on my head in half a second if I speak my mind.
Yeah.
The Imperium version of, oh, calm down, Mr. CIA agent. I'm not serious. In Minecraft.
So those are the two sides of Bjorn you get to see very often. I quite like that. He's also woken up every couple hundred years to tell the story of how the wolves were started because they're very, again, sagas. They're into spoken history. That's how you keep it alive.
They're Vikings. They're Vikings in space.
And Bjorn was there for all of it. He's very equipped to tell his own saga and Leman Russ's saga. So whenever they have a great feast, they always wake Bjorn up to tell, hey, Grandpa, tell us some stories. Get on, they love that. It's so cool. and it also is another reason why his impending death seems very it's more tragic, because look, being interred into a dreadnought is never pleasant. It wears on any space marine. He's been doing it for exceptionally long, and with each time he needs more and more time in stasis to be able to pull it off. Grandpa's not got it like he used to. And you pair that with the fact that even when he's in stasis sleeping, his soul is defending their fortress from the warp. Because, yeah, that's how stubborn he is.
Because Paps never sleeps.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a battery burning out, is very much so what it seems.
He's on the way out the door.
Mm-hmm. And so with his untimely death, or what seems to be coming his death,
I wouldn't say untimely. He's been around for like 10,000 years.
True, but they don't really have a backup Bjorn, dude.
Yeah.
Well, they do, but nothing quite like it.
They need to start training Bjorn's successor.
It would be a truly...
Bjork.
Oh, God. It would be a truly sad thing when he passes, because with him goes quite a bit of history, quite a bit of knowledge, quite a bit of first-hand account, which is a huge deal when you consider he's a primary source for a lot of things. And when you look at something as historic as him, things get messy quick. Remember how I mentioned how that's how he got his Fellhanded title? That's not a guarantee. He's so old, he himself has become victim to the wearing of time, where maybe that's how he got his name. Maybe he got it when he lost it on Prospero. Maybe a demon cursed him and he had to cut it off. We don't know.
I mean,
what matters is he's a Fellhanded guy.
I can't remember everything that I did when I was like 10.
Mm-hmm. And Bjorn...
This man has been doing... For I can't remember everything he did when he was 10,000.
Yes. And so Bjorn is slowly but surely withering away. And that is truly daunting. With Bjorn's slow withering, it does seem like the Imperium is about to lose one of its greatest defenders, one of my favorite figures throughout, and this fountain of history for both the Wolves and just the general crusade. But I have to turn it over to you. What do you think of him?
I really like the concept of, like, the old warrior. The, like, old warrior. The guy who remembers from the beginning. I'm a bit of a Transformers nut. And
more than meets the eye.
I'm not going to lie. They came out during my childhood. I've watched the old series, I think, once a while ago. But... I do have some like fond nostalgic memories for the Bayverse Transformers. And one of my favorite, even though I've gone back and watched the movies and like it's played for gags a lot, but I do genuinely like the concept of Jetfire, the guy who has been since the old war and just has
SR-71, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the SR-71.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And he just has all of the old ancient knowledge that nobody else can tap into. Like, it's just him. Mm-hmm. And I've always liked the old grizzled warrior who you can't replace, but you know is kind of out the door soon. Just because it's like, it's done so, especially in this, where it's done so well. Everything in the past is like normal to him. Just like, oh yeah, I fought in that battle. Oh yeah, I fought in that battle. And then somebody gets on their knees and is like, oh my god, the Grand Crusade of blah 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 blah. And it's like,
Can you stop, please?
Was just a battle. Please stop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really like that concept of the old warrior who's jaded by everything. He's done it all, seen it all, and everybody around him is just can't help but revere him. But he hates being revered, so it's. It's a fun writing motif that I like. It's fun.
I love it so much. But that does bring an end to this episode. We will see you this Saturday for the full Space Wolves video. A quick disclaimer, by the way. If you like The Thousand Suns, sorry.
I guess we'll get a video in recompense later on.
No, I mean, these videos are always taken from the perspective of the most hype I could give that faction. This is just one of the few instances where it will be detrimental to another.
Yeah.
So just, I know we have quite a few Thousand Suns fans. I know we have one Magnus floating around in here too. We have a couple of shards of the guy floating around. I don't know which one's the complete one, but we have one. It's going to be a hard knock life for you, buddy.
Sorry.
Does not mean I don't like you any less. Just brace.
We'll tell this story from your perspective when we get there.
Oh, that's going to be the fun of it. I get to tell the burning of Prospero from two heavily propagandized sides. It's going to be so much fun. Maybe I'll do a third video on just the facts of Prospero. But we'll see. I've contemplated doing battles for a while, honestly. I have, but it breaks one of my core rules, which is I don't like throwing too many proper nouns.
And battles throw a lot of proper nouns.
Oh, yes, they do.
The episode, if anybody, I think I've said this before, but if anybody has read, not The Odyssey. The Iliad. If anybody's read The Iliad and you've read the battle scenes where it's just like, and this guy died. And this guy died by this. And this guy died by this. And it's all not pronouns. It's all proper nouns. These are like named people that you will know for this legend and this legend only, unless you want to get deep into familial history in Greek myth, which is not really my game. So maybe this is just a me thing. But you read those battles, and it is a lot of just names, 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 names. And I feel like that's what 40K battles are going to be, just because of how many important small characters there are.
The problem with 40K battles is a lot of the time it is a couple of figures who you should already know. And so it relies on there's quite a bit of assumed knowledge when it comes to 40K battles, which is the most egregious thing.
I could not
tell you about any of the wars for... Imagine if you didn't know a thing about 40K, I couldn't tell you anything about the War for Armageddon, mm-hmm. because you wouldn't get it. Mm-hmm. Any of them. There's three. I could pick any one. It wouldn't get it. It would be very difficult. And so battles we might get to at some point. I do think Months of Shame deserve their own video, but that's neither here nor there.
I think after we've
covered... Whole wars deserve their own.
After we've...
Videos, we'll see.
After we've...
I mean, battles, we'll see.
After we've covered most of the factions, I think I'd be comfortable learning about the battles.
Maybe not even then. There's some battles I want to cover really badly.
Yeah.
Really bad. I want a cheap excuse to read some of my favorite books, okay? I'll be dead honest with you. I want any excuse. So there's a few battles I want to cover, if only because, man, I want to read that book, and I can justify it now.
Here's the next video idea, and it's a lot of commitment, but, you know, I think it'd be fun. We go to 4 years of military school, become master tacticians, and then analyze every battle.
Possibly. Who knows? Maybe.
Oh, I thought you would say, what the hell? That's too much effort for one single video.
First of all, that sounds genuinely fun for me. Second of all, you say that like I have not snuck in some of that in our previous videos. I've looked at the various levels of war. I've analyzed how these things go.
Fair enough.
That is not something I would be... I like Gilliman, for God's sakes. You just threatened me with a good time. Have you met me? Oh, no, I get to go learn how to be a tactical genius? Okay. Oh, yeah. Justify it.
Fair enough.
Give me a reason.
Fair enough. Though I don't think, I genuinely hope we're not put into a war anytime soon.
I would just love to be the recruiter that day, or a fly on the wall for that recruiter as I go, hey, I would like you to put me... What's the name of that one school? Hold on. I would love to see the look on the recruiter's face as I walk in and say, hey, I'd like you to send me to West Point. Why? YouTube video? And just look at the slack-jawed expression on him. And I wonder how that would shake out. I don't know. We'll see. I already have a 12-hour heresy video I need to do.
You never know. All I'll say is the U.S. military really likes
publicity. I do not think they would send me to West Point for a 40K video.
The U.S. military really likes publicity. It's not a 0% chance.
Listen, I already owe a 12-hour horse heresy video, okay? We'll see about the West Point battle.
It's a non-zero chance.
We will see if that happens.
It's a non-zero chance.
God, that's going to appear in my email now, and then I'm going to have to do it. We'll see. What matters for today is thank you so much for watching this episode on Beyond the Foil-Handed, and thank you for being you.
Next thing you know, you will be doing a video on Bjork the Uphanded.
Yeah, that pun's not going to make it in the video. I already left. I'm gone. Bye.
Nope. The video's ended now.